to drink some tea.
Go ahead and drink some tea, James Hans. I'm going to refer to you by your whole name throughout this interview, and now we are recording.
I'm going to refer to you as Sheila Canadio, because it's Canadian radio.
There you go.
This is not going to be on the radio.
That starts with a Q, though, because I go by Sheila Q, so we have to, it can be Canadio radio with a
Canadian
Q.
Canadio radio. Canadio.
All right, James Hans.
Hello.
Welcome to DH Radio and the Eastern Townships of Quebec and the world.
Thank you very much. Hello. Hello, listeners.
Now, if you're wondering, like, who's this James Hans guy? I know most of you are sitting near a computer, so go get comfortable and find yourself a little Google homepage.
A little one.
And Google James Hans, H-A-N-C-E. I've already put up all these links, so you guys can go and look at them, but just go and look. And what you will find is something that I literally gasped the first time I saw James Hans's artwork. And I think it's because I am a pop culture child of the last, number of years, since 1973, I guess we'll say. And so as a result, everything that is pop culture is exciting to me. And when I get to see a combination of pop culture, well, that's even more exciting. So just, okay, picture this, guys. For all you Star Wars fans out there, and I know there are many of you, imagine Star Wars meets Winnie the Pooh. Imagine Star Wars meets, oh my goodness, Calvin and Hobbes. Imagine
that is crazy.
Imagine Batman meets Vincent van Gogh. Okay, James Hans, tell me your story. Where are you? Who are you? And how did you come up with these amazing things?
You can't do that. You can't ask me everything in one question.
I can. No, I won't. Okay.
Hello.
All right.
Hello.
Age.
Age. Oh, really?
Yes.
I'm 35.
All right. I'm 37. 35. See, it's all right. We're good with that.
No, I win the ages so far.
You did. I did. Hey.
Nothing.
Location.
I'm in Jacksonville, Florida.
Original location?
Buckinghamshire, England.
All right. See, because I was pretty sure that wasn't a Floridian-style accent. I was fairly certain, in spite of being in the good old area of Quebec. Now, and where did your geekiness begin? Because you have to be a geek if you're doing these things.
Oh, I resent that. No, actually, just forever, really. What child growing up in the mid-70s didn't get into Star Wars and the Goonies and Labyrinths and all that sort of stuff. I just think, it was the most amazing era to have grown up in, because all this technology was being tested and there was no internet, so any time a movie came out, you had to wait. And the only way you could see it was in the movies. And then you come home and you buy the action figures and you just relive it, and it becomes so much bigger than the movie was.
Because
your imagination is just exploding it in your mind. And that's sadly what kids don't have today, because everything's right there. The YouTube's right there, and they can download stuff before it's out. And, I'm really glad that I got to, my mind got to grow when it did. That sounds ridiculous, doesn't it?
You know what? It does and it doesn't, because the thing is when, we had sort of had to pay attention when things were happening, because if we didn't, we couldn't just watch
replay
it all.
It.
Yeah, exactly. And until a little later on with our beta and VHS days. But when you went to see something in the theater, it was going to be a heck of a long time before you actually got to watch it at home 50,000 times, which
exactly.
I did with the Goonies, and I did with Ghostbusters, and I did with, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and through the first two Star Wars movies, I was convinced it was Dark Vader.
Vader?
You never see it written down, so I just
That's
tell, yeah.
True.
And of course, children in the playground were like, "What did you say?" And I'd say, and they just destroy me.
Oh.
With their knowledge. They bought the book, you see, and it was in the book. So. Never had the book. Never had the AT-AT either. I never had that. I bought it last year. And I just keep looking at it, doesn't it?
I really want the... I had friends who had the Darth Vader carrying case for the action figures. And I think that they never played with their toys ever, because somehow they have all their action figures still intact. They have the little, the little tiny disco ball thingy that Luke has to practice with in the Millennium Falcon. They still have. How does anybody have that?
I never had that. Are you sure it's not just like a...
No, it's a little thing.
A whopper that's covered in fluff and bits of circuit board.
It does look like that. But it
does
is
it?
It yeah, but it was it is that piece. I was amazed, because in my household I grew up with two brothers, so I had that kind of great combination world of being able to do all the girl stuff and being able to do all the guy stuff too, but I didn't have to ask for their toys. I just got to play with them. So that was kind of, that was kind of cool. And, but I mean, G.I. Joe rusted to the soap dish in the bathtub, you know,
like they, because they had the little metal joints, didn't they?
Yeah, exactly. So they didn't get, they didn't get preserved and whatnot. Now, okay. So we've figured out that just as, you know what, it's totally osmosis of growing up in a certain time with a certain kind of really pervasive pop culture of the last chunk of years, that it's in you. Now, what about the art?
The art, I was always drawing on something like envelopes or just walls and floors and everything as a kid. And it just always like, just crossbreeding everything, like the A-Team van with the Muppet sitting in the front, like in the Muppet movie in the Studebaker and whatnot.
Wait, who would be the A-Team if it was the Muppets?
Well, I guess you'd have Rolf as BA, because he's got that, you know, that thing going on.
Yeah.
And I want to say Kermit as Hannibal, not his demeanor, but more his role in the
leadership, Muppet. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's got to be Animal as Murdoch, I think.
See, Janice, that's so good.
Janice is Amy. Colonel Decker probably, someone's going to steal this, aren't they? Colonel Decker is going to be Sam the American Eagle, it has to be.
So we've got Face left.
Face. Oh, Face.
See, Guy Smiley, if you were going to take somebody from that, but he didn't cross over to the Muppets. He was only on Sesame Street, I think.
That's right, yeah. I think it's just Kermit was the crossover. They had Bert and Ernie on it and Big Bird real briefly. But I remember, how about Link Hogthrob from Pigs in Space?
Oh, my God. It's perfect. Yeah, it's perfect. I love it.
I'm going to end up doing this at some point. I know it.
Oh, yes. Please do. And now, so, but what about background as far as, like, are you a trained artist? What's your, or
no.
Is this is something, this is your free-form, amazing, like, talent and imagination?
Oh, you. I don't know, it's just the one thing in life that's been a constant thing for me that's been my thing. You know, I was never particularly good at sports or anything, or walking or anything else. So it's basically talking, just drawing and just like constantly drawing, watching TV and drawing and doing my homework and drawing and that sort of thing. So it's just gone from there, really. I went to art college for about 2 days or something. And I was completely frustrated with it. And it was supposed to be like an accelerated learning thing. But the whole 2 days, it was like learning how to hold a pencil. I don't think we got to touch it onto paper the entire time, 2 days.
Hey, 2 days is a long time to just hold a pencil.
It is, right? Yeah, exactly. So I gave it, but I was already drawing before that, so and then I just sort of, you know, developed it myself, and I tried with oils to start with, but which takes about 4 years to dry. I used to lean in it and like, oh, I've done this painting, and then I'll do another one, that looks good, and then I'll put them face to face to sort of, so, you know, and then realize I just made a butterfly or one of those, you know, psychologist ink
thing. Oh, yeah, like an ink blot test. Like Rorschach test.
Rorschach.
That's how he got his name. That his mask is a Rorschach test.
You see, I'm destroying my geekdom right now.
No, you're not. Everybody's got to learn somewhere there, you know, exactly. Along the line. That's what it's all about. Hey, you just got to discover something. Thanks to me.
Did.
I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah.
I'm a huge Watchmen geek, too, so I could probably rattle off all kinds of information about it if you wanted to.
You know, I tried watching the movie.
Don't watch the movie. Read the graphic novel.
Everyone said that. I've always made that mistake.
And then watch the movie. Because I saw the movie, literally, I read Watchmen, and I recommend to everyone out there you'll have to be able to handle a little content, guys, because they're not superheroes, they're crime fighters.
Yeah.
And then, and living in a really messed up world, and then watch the movie. It will be a different experience. I literally watched it. I went to see it two nights in a row on IMAX. Like, I had to. When I saw it the first night, I thought, I have to go back again.
And
it's really, you have to read it.
The movie's on for a day and a half, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you must have been in the movies for 4 days.
I was in the movies for 4 days. And I wasn't allowed to hold a pencil to the movie either. They're just here, hold the pencil.
Hold the pencil?
Art school. Sorry.
Oh,
stupid. Yeah, I know. Silly reference.
So you watched Watchmen for as long as I was in art school.
Yeah.
That's quite symbolic, if you think about it.
Yeah.
I don't know how symbolic, but somewhere someone is saying, that's quite symbolic.
I didn't come out there.
Can you do me a favor? Can you say about again? Because I like that.
About.
Yay!
It's not a boot, though. It's not a boot.
It's not. It's about. It's to me.
And you know what it is we do say it differently, but where you really have to hear it said is in the Maritimes, because then you will hear a boat.
A boat.
Yeah, it's a boat. Like if you just said a boat, like a ship, a boat. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, exactly. And then you live in a house.
what if your house is in a boat and you're talking about that house? Yeah, we would say that.
A boat, exactly. A boat? Yes, that's what you would say. Exactly.
Oh, you're not going to hear any of this.
Why not? It's great. It's culture. It's stuff. It's real.
I've instantly lost my Canadian followership.
Heck no. So, okay. Now, in all of these adventures of pop culture combinations, you mm-hmm. have brought forth something called Wookiee the Chew.
Yes.
Now, that is the first thing that I had seen, the first piece of artwork that I had seen of yours. And it was a very geeky friend of mine, like an ultra powerful geek who could rule things kind
like
of thing.
A Sith geek.
Yes, who's super extremely bright in every way possible, very powerful. And he was like, "Look." And I don't think there was any other word associated with it. And it was Christopher Robin.
Chris Solo.
Yes.
Chris Solo Robin.
And Wookiee the Chew, who is now it's the remarkable thing is anybody who has read the Winnie the Pooh books will remember how distinct those drawings are.
Yeah.
And anybody who has loved Star Wars recognizes anything to do with Star Wars in any kind of like reference, right? We're searching every day. Yeah. Look at that person's belt. Look at those nice boots. Hey, I like your tauntaun, you know, and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Which we kind of need in Quebec sometimes, especially in the winter.
You need your tauntauns.
Yeah. So now it's this combination. You can recognize that image. And when you know Star Wars, you're recognizing the characters right away, too. So tell me about the putting together Wookiee the Chew.
Oh, it was... I actually had a dream about it, and I woke up, and I was sort of mulling it over. Like, would it work? And I sat and sketched it. Because it was really obvious when I thought about it. And I thought, someone must have done this already. There must be a Christopher Robin and Winnie the Pooh as Han and Chewie, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then I Googled it, and it just didn't exist. So I sketched it. Which was one of the first times where I sketched something and it was just instantly worked without a redraw or anything. So okay, so I put a few sample images on Facebook and I said, you know, what do you think of this? Should I you know pursue this and make something of it? And people were like really really enthusiastic about it. So within a few days, I'd done maybe 6 or 7 large images that people were, and I got a few messages. Oh, you should do a book. I was like, yeah, I could do a book. So within like the next couple of weeks, my friend Max and I had written. I'd written the first Wookiee the Chew book, which was The House at Chew Corner, which is really loosely based on A New Hope. You know, it's got like it's got Obi-Wan is the Obi-Wan character, and it's got like a Death Star that's an actual tree, and of course, you know, Wookiee the Chew collecting boba berries, which are, you know, it goes from there, and it just was so easy. It slot together so easily, and so many people have read it since, and just said such amazing things, and just I've given it to children, and it's been read in schools, and I've got letters from the children that have read it with their own pictures and extensions of the story. It was just like, what more could you ask for, you know, when you put something out like that?
That's incredible.
Yeah, thank you. It was so well received. I'm actually working on book two right now. I'm about 2/3 of the way finished, which is based on The Empire Strikes Back.
Oh,
so there's a lot of snow, and there's the AT-AT, which is Ator. He's the and he gets stuck in the middle of a frozen lake, and they have to figure out a way of getting him out. And there's new characters like Taunter and Tauntu, which are the Kangaroo.
Yeah.
And of course, and there's a bit in it when they're traveling home and it's snowing, and Wookiee the Chew is really cold, and Taunter says, "Well, why don't you hop in my pouch?" And he goes, "Okay." So he hopped in, and he's like, "I thought you were fuzzy on the outside." It had to be done, you know? So thank you, George.
I think that one of the things is sometimes you can be inspired by something and it will take you to it like so far, you know, like
yeah.
You can do like say it'll be one really inspired image like the your Dark Knight and Starry Knight
right.
combo, you know. People tend to recognize Starry Night by Van Gogh, and when you've got Batman, The Dark Knight, overlooking Gotham City, it's probably something you might be able to eke some more things out of, except that it's sort of a standalone piece, whereas this kind of inspiration, it's really amazing that you've been able, that it rolled, you know, that it continued on.
Yeah, it just seemed to grow by itself, really, you know. And the titles of the books were already there. I mean, like, the first book was The House at Pooh Corner, which became The House at Chew Corner. The second book was When We Were Very Young, so that became When We Were Very Jedi. And the third book was Now We Are Six, which, of course, has got to be Now We Are Sith.
Oh, so, Now We Are Sith.
You know, I was thinking about the end of book two. You know, the end of Empire Strikes Back, you've got Han and Carbonite. Like, the rebels are falling apart. You know, Vader's, you know, getting all this power, and Luke's hands missing and all that sort of stuff. I did think about doing an ending, not the same as that, but a real sort of, really? And then leaving it 7 years before I did the next one. Because children these days don't know what it's like to be tortured for 7 years of waiting for, you know, to see what's going to happen. But I wouldn't do that.
It was a long wait. And I think that might be, like, what are your thoughts on the... And I don't know if you're willing to go here, but what are your thoughts on episodes 1, 2, and 3?
I'm hanging up. my thoughts, you know, it's difficult. I went to see The Phantom Menace, like, really excited, and like the scrolling text and the Star Wars and the music. I was, you know, I was so happy, and then it began, and increasingly was disappointed, and then especially the pod race, and I think for me it was the pod race and the commentators, you know, turned it into a sort of Shrek pop culture reference parody of itself. I can understand how it's become that, because the world has changed, and it makes me think, if I was like a 5 years old now, and the original trilogy was something I grew up with, would I feel the same about it at 35 as I do the original trilogy? Yeah, and of course the technology was much more advanced for these movies, so they look really out of place if you watch all six together.
Oh yeah, and it's like it's just two complete. To me, it's two completely separate experiences.
Yes.
In spite of the fact that it's supposed to be the continuation of one story, it just seems like two very significantly different ways of telling the story, and means of telling the story, and two different selves too, because part of it as well is, when I saw The Phantom Menace, I didn't know what to think, and then I was sitting beside a 2.5-year-old, and he, like, a 2.5-year-old who was,
he was
clearly, oh, exactly, he just felt it didn't follow, it just didn't, yes, anyway,
yeah,
but sure, he literally drove a pod racer during the pod race, and, you know, he was making car sounds and steering and whatever, and I thought, it's going to be so different for this generation, you know?
Yeah.
And he was captivated for the whole movie. And it I'm sure if I hadn't been sitting beside that kid, I would have seen it so differently. And I have sort of purposely introduced my boys to the last three, which were our first three, before the other ones. I'm kind of I sort of want you to like this. No,
yeah,
anyway.
Of course. I mean, what was their comparison between the six?
Yeah. Oh, you know what? They loved all of them. But right. I think it's because of the perspective, which is so, it's such a different thing.
Yeah.
So now, how have you been finding or determining which famous works of art that you're going to
destroy?
No way. It's like you
reimagine.
Yes, it's a bit of a Frankenstein moment, which is
really
cool. It's alive.
Copies of oil and acrylic. I don't know. I guess it's kind of obvious. It's like, I mean, anything that's a classic piece. I've done the Mona Lisa twice now. The first one I did, the Mona Leia.
Yes.
It was Princess Leia with Alderaan in the background and a blaster and that little wry smile and that whatnot. And then I did another one, which was, I think it was KW from Where the Wild Things Are.
Yes.
As a Mona Lisa, yeah. I think I called that the KW code. I can't quite remember. But just stuff like the people that we instantly recognize. They'll even recognize the character that I put in there or the original piece. And I've just done the kiss, you know, the Gustav Klimt.
Yes.
But I put Han and Leia in, and in the same. I'm actually going to publish it to the website today. So by the time this interview airs, hopefully it will be ready to be seen. But it's just stuff that makes sense to me, you know, to pull one thing out and replace it with another. You know, just it's very important that it flows. Like when I did Beaker from the Muppets in the Scream.
That's one of the ones I was going to refer to.
Mm-hmm. Oh, was it? It just seemed a logical choice because it's that character in that situation, and that's what he'd do, you know.
Yeah. I can see how you, I hadn't thought about doing it that, in that order, you know, like, I think that, Beaker's constantly, he's constantly meeping, you know, like, and with his wide open, distraught looking face, and so it's such a perfect, it's the right thing for him to be this Scream.
Precisely, yeah.
So it's, and now I'm seeing it so, oh, I see it so differently now to imagine the character first.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it'll be the painting. You look at the painting, and it'll be a situation like on the, you know, like the umbrellas on the beach or something. And I can't think of one for that, but particularly. But you know, sometimes the painting makes it obvious as to what you should do with it. That sounds so pretentious, doesn't it?
No.
The painting talks to me.
The painting gave me a message. Yeah. I followed and listened.
If I get it wrong, I kick the canvas over and smash the place up.
That's beautiful. That's what should happen.
Just smash the place up. I think that's the key. These days, no matter what happens, just walk out. Yeah, I'll go and this place messed up.
I love it. Hey, you know, we're going to take a break. We're going to throw on some music and we'll be back in just a second.
Alrighty.
You're listening to DH Radio. This is James Hance. Go Google now.
Hello.
This is DH Radio on CJMQ 88.9 FM, and James Hance is not leaving the studio without the final four. All right. James, what would you say is your greatest strength?
My left arm.
Fabulous. Are you lefty?
I am lefty.
Well, then that's good. What would you say is your greatest weakness?
My right arm.
Oh.
I throw like a chicken.
That's about the best kind of reference.
Is it?
Yeah.
I'm a chicken thrower.
Oh, I bet you Camilla got a good arm, though. When you're talking Muppets, though, I'm pretty sure she threw stuff.
I think Gonzo would have aim for me. Unless it was at him, he might go like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, what would you say is your favorite candy?
John Candy.
Oh! That's brilliant, and no one has ever answered that. That's great.
This is all you're going to get from now on. Just like, yeah, what James said.
Because how could there be possibly be Charleston Chew Kid has nothing on. Yeah. Now, what would you say you would like to be remembered for?
Probably for about 15 years.
That would be handy.
Yeah, that'd be nice. And then just forget it. Start again. Move on.
I'm glad to see. No, yeah, I'm really glad to see that you're seeing beyond December of 2012. As long as you stretched beyond that date, I'm pretty good with that.
I've got a Mayan advent calendar.
Do you?
It's just burning people in chocolate form behind every window. And lava. A picture of John Cusack running. Lovely.
That is so perfect. I think I may need to make that now.
Do you? I'm getting 50% of everything you make.
You're going to have to do the artwork on the front of it. I'll make the chocolates.
They should do like a pin-up Mayan calendar. So like it's got the Mayans, like, leaning over a bonnet of a car, sort of washing the window, with lava pouring behind it. I can say that. That's not bad. That's not a bad thing, right?
No!
Okay, you got in trouble for that. Well, God bless the Mayans.
Anything involving lava is pretty good with me, I think. I'm pretty happy with it. Yeah. All right. Oh, I'm just, now my imagination is starting to do that crossover thing, because I'm thinking, like, lava lamps maybe will be really popular in 2012.
And I just thought mayonnaise, for some reason, so like, Mayan people spread onto toast. No, that's not, mayonnaise on toast. I thought that was a Canadian thing.
Mayonnaise on toast?
I don't know.
It's only if it's got maple syrup on it, and then we're good to go.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Then it doesn't even matter. Mm. Whatever combination of stuff. Hey, James Hance, this has been a blast. And I've had a huge inspiration. And if you're down with this, then I know that the listeners of CJMQ will be down with this. I think what we need to do is we need to get a little group of interesting readers from the Eastern Townships to do a radio play of your Wookiee the Chew work.
Oh, that would be lovely, wouldn't it?
Yes, and it's something that we can post online so it can go all over the world and people can have a chance to hear it. We'll find the right music for it and the right voices for it, and we're just going to do it.
fantastic. Which reminds me, see, I've got an audio book coming out in a couple of months.
Really?
Of the first book, yeah. And there's a great band that are going to supply the music for it. But this is totally something that should be done.
Well, I think we need to do it.
I think you guys should do an original Wookiee the Chew audio thing.
We're going to do it. I'm so glad we've got your blessing, because it's going to happen.
Of course. If you make any money, I'm going to come down
on you guys. Well, I think what we're going to have to do, because now that we've had this amazing discussion and inspired conversation, I think we're going to have to find a place to distribute your book. So that can either be here at the station, or maybe we'll find a suitable little book nook in our area that will... But we'll let the listeners know as soon as it's out there.
That'll be wonderful.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Sheila.
Absolute blast. And stay in touch, because I want to know more and hear the it's only just begun.
It has, like that song by...
the Carpenters.
Oh, yeah.
We'll end with that. I'm putting that on right now.
Are you?
Oh, sure.
No. How about they put on... put that on. That's good.
If you come up with another idea, just email me and let me know what we should be putting on here. We're good to go. All right. Thanks so much, James Hance.
Thank you. Shut up.